Okay. As you said, my name is Lara Stoll. I'm a PhD student at the University of California, Berkeley, and I also work at the International Computer Science Institute, or ICSI, as many of you know. And I would like to just also acknowledge my co-author, George Doddington, who was a fundamental part of this work. So just a quick overview, pretty standard, start out with what we're trying to do and why, briefly discuss some related work, then go over our approach to the problem, give you the results, do a little bit additional analysis, and conclude with a summary and some future work ideas. So I think we can all agree that automatic speaker recognition system performance depends on a number of factors, one of which are intrinsic speaker characteristics. So there's the sense that if, you know, as humans we notice that certain speakers sound more alike. Similarly, there's this idea that systems, automatic systems, will perform better or worse for different speakers. So the goal of this work is to predict which speaker pairs will be difficult for automatic speaker recognition systems to distinguish. We did some preliminary work which suggested that speaker pairs that are hard for one system are also hard for other systems. And of course, you can use a system to select the speaker pairs and you'll probably do really well, but we wanted to stay away from using any one system and instead have a general approach and just use features that will hopefully capture a degree of speaker similarity. The motivation, besides just being an interesting task, is to potentially better focus the research and reduce the amount of data needed to estimate system performance with confidence. So there's a couple types of related work. The first has to do with the idea of different speakers causing different problems. The infamous George Doddington Zoo paper categorized speakers based on system performance. So you have goats who cause a large number of false rejections as target speakers. You have lambs who cause a large number of false acceptances as target speakers. Wolves, who cause a large number of false acceptances as imposter speakers. And finally, your default well-behaved sheep. In this work, we don't actually distinguish between lambs and wolves since we're looking at speaker pairs. But we went with wolves in the title because hunting for lambs didn't sound so good. There's been a little other work done on dealing with these speakers that may be difficult. There's been work that's shown that there are performance differences between high and low pitched speakers. And then there have been some work done that tries to develop a method to deal with these problem speakers. The other element of related work that's relevant is in the whole features that are used to describe speakers or characterize speakers. So you can draw these from a lot of different types of work. Obviously, speaker recognition approaches have used a variety of features. Certainly not an exhaustive list here, but things like pitch and energy distributions or dynamics, prosodic statistics, jitter and shimmer. In looking at perceptual speaker characterization or discrimination, you'll find a lot of formant frequencies and bandwidths and dynamic features, and other acoustic parameters that influence voice individuality include pitch frequency, contour, and fluctuation, again, the formant frequencies, and long-term average spectrum. So our approach is fairly straightforward. Basically, we compute feature values over some speech data corresponding to various speakers, and then using these feature values, compute a measure of similarity for all speaker pairs. And then looking at these measures, look at the speaker pairs that have the highest and lowest values in terms of these similarity measures, and compare performance on those speakers to all speakers. So the features we consider here, first of all, pitch statistics, mean, median, range, and mean average slope, which we denote in these ways. Jitter and shimmer, the relative average perturbation of jitter and a 5-point amplitude perturbation quotient for shimmer. Formant frequency statistics, the mean and median of the first three formants. All the data we work with is 8 kilohertz, so although higher formants might be useful, we didn't calculate them here. The mean and median energy. Long-term average spectrum energy statistics, including the mean, standard deviation, range, slope, and local peak height. Then we did a 14th order LP analysis and found the frequencies from the coefficient roots, both with and without a minimum magnitude requirement, which is essentially limiting the bandwidth. And then we took all these frequencies and binned them in a histogram. And finally, we have the mode and median spectral slope. So we have all these features. Well, what measures do we use? For the scalar features, of which almost all of them are, we simply took the absolute or percent difference. Also, we, in addition to using the formant frequencies individually, we looked at sums of the formant frequencies. And we also looked at vectors of formant frequencies and took the Euclidean distance between the vectors. And finally, for the histograms of frequencies, we calculated the correlation as a measure. So there's two different ways you can compute the single measure for a speaker pair. The first is to take, for every speaker, take all of the feature values over the conversation sides that are available and just get an average feature value over the conversations, and then compute the measure between these average values for each speaker. The other approach is to take on a conversation-by-conversation basis between two speaker pairs or two speakers, compute the distance measure first, and then average over the conversation pairs. And in the results I present, I just present whatever method gave better, larger differences. So the data that we used, for the feature measure calculation and speaker pair selection, we use the 2008 NIST follow-up evaluation data. So this is all interview data, which is recorded on microphones. We limited it to just the lavalier microphone for quality purposes. And just as a side note, almost all the speakers have 4 conversations available. There's a handful with 3 or 5, but the good news is it's multiple conversations, not just one. And then once we have the speaker pairs selected, we evaluate performance using the data from the NIST 2008 evaluation short 2, short 3 condition. So this data varies from the the follow-up data in a couple of respects. In addition to possibly being an interview, it could also be speech from a telephone conversation. And in addition to having the lavalier microphone channel, there are other microphones and as well as the telephone channel. So available, we had submissions that were shared by participating sites. And so thank you to everyone who shared their submission. The short 2, short 3 condition originally had, I think, maybe around 90,000 trials or so. I had to remove the trials that correspond to speakers that weren't in the selection data. And after you do that, you're left with about 55,000 trials. And then furthermore, when you just sub-select and only keep trials corresponding to some percentage of speaker pairs, you get around 4,000 or 11,000 trials left on average. And We only keep target trials for speakers who show up in one of the speaker pairs. So how do we evaluate the system performance? There are various metrics you can use. What we look at here are the minimum detection cost function, which of course is a weighted sum of with relative weights for errors. This is all done with the 2008 costs, so it's not the low false alarm like the 2010 evaluation. And then since we're looking at imposter speaker pairs, we look at the false alarm rate, which of course is simply for a given decision threshold, the number of false alarm errors that occur out of a total number of possible target non-target trials. So for every system submission that we have, we first, just looking at the trials for the most or least similar speaker pairs, we compute the change in DCF relative to what it is for all speaker pairs. And then take all of these system differences and average over the systems. So the results are just a typical overall trend for the systems. And then with the false alarm rate, we for the all speakers, we look at the decision threshold that generates a false alarm rate of 1%. And then at the same decision threshold, see what the false alarm rate is for the most and least similar speaker pairs. And of course, if we're actually picking, if more similar speaker pairs actually corresponds to more difficult to distinguish speaker pairs, then we expect these changes in the DCF and false alarm rate to be positive. So here are the results when you look at 1% of speaker pairs. In each case, the top row corresponds to the least similar speaker pairs, so performance is improving, and this row is corresponds to most similar speaker pairs, so that the performance is getting worse. So we noticed that we are able to find features and measures that will select speaker pairs with the desired tendencies. If we then compare performance on 1% to performance on 5%, you can see that it's less pronounced when you include more speaker pairs. And in some cases, you have these negative or opposite trends from what you expect. So I pretty much mentioned all these points. The only other thing to note is that changes in performance are not uniform across site submissions, so that is one issue. Okay, so here's a debt curve for one system. When we use the Euclidean distance between vectors of the first three formants to select speaker pairs, the solid lines correspond to the most similar speaker pairs being used, and the dashed lines are least similar. Red is 1% and green is 5%, and the black line is the case for all speaker pairs. We notice that in this particular instance, there's a bigger difference when looking at the least similar speaker pairs, and the most similar speaker pairs are much closer to performance over all speaker pairs. Although this doesn't happen all of the time, it is certainly the general tendency to have this larger gap in this direction. Here's another example that shows that it doesn't always hold. And this is a different system and a different feature measure. It's the percent difference of median energy in this case. And you get better separation here. It varies in how much separation there is and across systems. So we've been able to do some stuff, but we expect we could probably do even better if we use more knowledge of speaker systems. So we decided to just simply use GMMs, since they show up obviously in a lot of systems. So we adapted speaker-specific GMMs and then calculated the KL divergence between them as the measure of speaker similarity. When we do this, not surprisingly, we get better results. The previous charts all had just went from negative 50% to 50%, so you can see already that there are larger differences, which is, as I said, what we would expect. Here's Dett curve for a system using the KL divergence. Again, you can see that these are larger differences from the all performance, and we again see this asymmetry where it's a bigger gap for the dissimilar pairs than for the similar pairs. So as I mentioned, we tend to be more successful at selecting easy to distinguish speaker pairs, and possibly because these pairs may be easier to find. One possible explanation would be that if you have a speaker pair that is very dissimilar in terms of pitch or Forman frequencies, that, you know, a big difference is probably going to mean that the system is not going to confuse them. But on the flip side, if you're trying to figure out what makes a speaker pair difficult, just looking at any single feature may not be enough to capture that information. So using the KL divergence measure, I took a closer look at the speaker pairs that are selected as being the most and least similar. So in addition to looking at the 1% and 5% groups, also looked at 3%, 10%, and 20%. And in this data, there were 150 speakers overall, leading to about 1,800 unique speaker pairs for same sex, of course. And one thing we notice is that in the groups of the least similar speaker pairs, if you look at groups with the larger values of the divergence, who we would expect to be easier to distinguish, the majority of them are male. About, if you look at any one group, about 75% of the speaker pairs in the group will be male on average. To a lesser extent, we notice the opposite tendency when we look at more similar speaker pairs, which somewhat tend to be more female. The 1% and just 3% still have more male pairs, but the other groups have more female pairs. This, you know, may be part of the reason why system performance is typically better on males, and it's suggesting that, you know, males may exhibit a greater range of differences between them, so that there are likely to be more dissimilar male speaker pairs. And finally, still looking at these groups, we notice that there's a tendency to find two types of speakers. There are speakers who frequently appear as members of difficult-to-distinguish speaker pairs, and speakers who occur frequently as members of easy-to-distinguish speaker pairs. In fact, there are 15 speakers who never appear in the most similar groups, and 24 speakers who never appear in the most dissimilar groups. I forgot to put, I think this is, these 24 speakers, there's 10 male and 14 female. So this tends to support the idea that there are these wolves and lambs, speakers who are more difficult or more similar to other speakers. So just a summary of what I've mentioned. First of all, it is possible to predict what speaker pairs will be difficult for a typical speaker recognition system to distinguish. For the features that we considered here with pitch, form, and frequency, the best ones seem to be the Euclidean distance between the first three form and frequencies. But the best measure overall was the more complex KL divergence measure between speaker-specific GMMs. I mentioned, of course, that we're typically more successful at identifying dissimilar speaker pairs, and that in addition to being able to find these speaker pairs, using these measures can provide potentially useful information about a speaker's tendency to be similar or dissimilar to other speakers. So future work. One thing to try is testing combinations of multiple feature measures as the method for selecting similar speaker pairs. I did a little bit of work on this where I just basically assigned a rank according to each feature measure and then summed the ranks over the speaker pairs and did selection that way, and that did improve results. Another extension is to, instead of focusing on imposter speaker pairs, see if you can figure out what target speakers will be difficult for the system to correctly recognize. And one thing that certainly needs to be investigated is the lack of consistency of behavior for the same set of speakers across different systems. We may be able to find potential trends in behavior across classes or types of systems. Of course, with the site submissions that we used here, almost all of the submissions are, in fact, a fusion of multiple systems, so might need to do more of a breakdown to really get at the issue. Okay, that is all I have. Thank you for listening. And
thanks. Questions?
Thank you, Lara, for this presentation. I have a question about your formant extraction. Do you have done this extraction for all the vowels, or did you control that your extraction, you use all the vowels, or for do the difference you do with one type of vowels? Because you know, you use all the vowels, or you do an extraction according to the vowels?
No, so we didn't. It was just over the entire file. So it's definitely, you could probably get much better estimates than what we actually did.
Okay, because the problem is that you have a lot of difference according to the vowels pronounced.
Sure.
So modelizing that, I think that it is more the sample and the phonological information that are used than the speaker information. So
of course, this is convolving the phonetic content with the speaker.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
I could just make a proposal and say a comment only for George after. Just for the comment, I would like to propose to you to change a little bit the terminology and link it to what we presented here. Maybe you could speak more about pairs of recordings than pair of speakers, because with only four recordings...
I'm sorry, pairs of what?
Pairs of speech extracts.
Oh, just
speech examples mm-hmm. now. And I am really... I will wait with a big attention the future work on databases with a lot of examples for one speaker to know if we could have some speaker profiles or if it's only some recording profiles. And just a comment for George, I think this work is a very good example of a real application for closed-set speaker identification.
Thank you.
Other questions? No? I have a question. It seems in figure 5 that the average or all depth is most similar to the most difficult. It means that the trials of NIST are good, difficult trials.
I'm sorry. I don't know what figure 5 in the paper is. I think you mean this one?
I mean the GMM, yes.
So it seems that the
all curve is most similar to the difficult.
It was definitely the case that it was.
So NIST selected well the trials.
Thank you.
So thanks again, the speaker, and to the next.